The problem is that our beef industry is under attack, and people don't realize that. If we look at tyranny, when tyranny pops up around the world throughout history, what's the first thing that they go after? It's the food system. And when we've seen dictators rise, when we've seen communism rise, it's the food that they attack first, they wipe out, and then they have total control, because if the people can't eat, they can't fight back. The plan is 3D printed meat and crickets. This is the opt-out of that system, and I don't think anybody's excited about that system. So if you're excited about not eating crickets and 3D printed beef, then come help us out at the Beef Initiative. Let's be a catalyst for the change. Let's save the ranchers. Let's protect our beef heritage all over the world. And yet I don't think it's hyperbole at all or woo-woo at all. Let's actually save humanity this way. We're at a critical point that if we go any further, we're going to lose it. We look at the entire macro system of the world global financial system, and as Bitcoiners, we see it teetering. We know that one country going down can take down all the currencies of all the countries. Same with ranching. We're in a precarious situation, and the time is now. This acquisition happened when it happened. Thank goodness it happened. It gives us a place to actually recreate a whole new system that's backed by Bitcoin, a re-incentivized system that can help save ranchers now. That's the market opportunity. The danger? It's extreme. I'm putting myself at danger talking to you today.
Greetings and salutations, my fellow plebs. My name is Walker, and this is the Bitcoin Podcast. I am coming to you live here with Tom Tabor of the Beef Initiative. Tom, before we get into kind of some of the announcements today, some of the other stories we're going to tell today, how the heck are you?
I'm doing amazing, Walker. It's so good to see you. I hope we get to see each other in person again soon.
Yeah, it's been a little bit too long, but I have a feeling we'll end up together again soon.
I think so too.
You just came back from El Salvador. Where are you broadcasting to us from right now?
We're broadcasting from Mark Chapman's 3C Ranch in Hyco, Texas, and I'm currently in his amazing leather shop. It's kind of a temple of leather, where he's a master craftsman of leather tooling, an educator, a rancher. Been walking around his ranch today. It's been really nice.
I can't say I've ever been on what I imagine is a massive ranch like that. How many head of cattle does he have?
It's hundreds, but I'm not sure the exact number.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have you here. I appreciate you choosing the Bitcoin Podcast to bring this announcement out. I think this is going to be a really interesting show for people. I think that people are going to learn a lot. I think this is a really important topic. And just generally really excited to have you on here and to be talking about what you guys are doing. So I think it looks like we are good to go. I think we are live everywhere. I'm just double checking to make absolutely sure. But I believe we are totally good to go. Let me make sure this is also on Noster and it's live there. Let's see. We should be solid. But all right. And I think we are live everywhere. So Tom, we are here. We are broadcasting live across Noster, X, YouTube, Rumble. I think Twitch also. If any of the Twitch streamers happen to tune in for some beef education, we'll see. Mm-hmm. I think where we need to start here is by setting the tone for folks about why we're having this conversation today. And also there's some news that basically just broke that we're going to cover with regard to the beef industry. But I think before we talk about basically what's changing in the beef industry, after today, what we need to talk about is actually what is broken in the beef industry, because I don't think we were talking about a little bit of this before the show. Mm-hmm. I don't think most people really have a clue about how messed up this system is. So can we maybe start there a little bit? Can you give us just a little bit of a background of what is so broken in the beef industry that this even needs fixing? People get their beef at the store. Everything seems fine. What are people missing about what's rotten? What's the scam in the beef industry?
Yeah, the problem is that our beef industry is under attack, and people don't realize that. We're as Bitcoiners, people are always eating carnivore. We're looking for grass-fed, grass-finished beef, but there's way more behind that. Just at the grocery store, there's an attack right there. The mislabeling of beef is rampant. The beef you're buying is not necessarily American beef, and you're not getting the quality that you think you're getting. Everybody's buying beef by the pound, but we're not getting the quality that we actually really expect. And what's happening on the ground for ranchers is that they're under attack from many different ways. They're part of government subsidies. So in order to be a rancher, you sign up for a program, you have to follow the rules of that program. Those programs are run and dictated by big corporations. There's four corporations that are responsible for distributing and buying and trading 85% of the beef in America. And people don't know that. It's centralized, it's captured, and they set the price at the market. The ranchers do everything they can to raise the best beef. When they bring it to the auction house, they get the price they're told they get. It's not supply and demand, so it's quite cruel to them. They're knocked out of that. And then when they get the cows, they actually just overfeed them with corn, with things that aren't good for them, that give them metabolic disease, fatten them up so they're marbled. But when they die, they're about to die from being mistreated, actually. And it's quite awful what's going on there. We just announced, there are things going on in the government that look positive. They've just announced that there's a regenerative $700 million for regenerative agriculture. But is that going to get captured too? There's a good chance that government's not doing it exactly right and helping the little guys out. It's going to go to the big boys. So we're here to do something different, to give ranchers a chance. We're here to teach them about Bitcoin because they don't necessarily know what that is. It just sounds like internet money. And they aren't sure exactly the money they're working for. Is that really money or is that just debt coupons?
Yeah, I think so. There's two pieces to this education here. One is kind of educating, let's say, the both normies and Bitcoiners and everyone in between about the scam that is the beef industry. The other piece of this is educating folks, ranchers, independent cattle ranchers in the beef industry about Bitcoin. And it seems like the Beef Initiative, with all the work that Texas Slim has been doing, you're now an executive director there. So you're working on this too, but that's really about bridging that gap, right? And figuring out how both of these, one of this technology, you know, this technology and also this group of really important ranchers can kind of have this symbiotic relationship where this matchup really makes sense. Is that fair to say that that's the kind of the crossover there, is that these are two areas that can really benefit and help each other in meaningful ways.
It's really true. And I met Slim in the second Beef Initiative event he ever had in Crawford, Texas at Jason Rick's Ranch. It was an amazing conglomeration of ranchers and Bitcoiners coming together, and we got to shake each other's hands and get to know each other. And it's like, wow, there's actually an opportunity here that's never been done before. Slim has done an amazing amount of research just being on the road for the last 7 years and collecting data, talking to ranchers, building his network of experts around the world that really know what they're doing and advising. And that was really the genesis for me, an introduction to the Beef Initiative. And just in the last many months, I've come on and joined Slim in this mission, been by his side for 24 hours for several months now, and in pickup trucks all around Texas and on flights to El Salvador and traveling around the country. And there's been a lot that's gone on in that time.
Okay, so maybe, and I want to get into also what's happening down in El Salvador. There's a lot of stuff here, but I think maybe it's worthwhile for us to go a little bit deeper onto the kind of the scam, the manipulation, the kind of the abuse of the beef industry today. So can you talk about it at a high level? I don't think people understand how centralized this industry is. If we're talking about the big players in this, they don't understand how controlled it is, and that it's not just these kind of, you know, pseudo monopolies, but it's also the government interference side of things. And that's just like a revolving door, basically.
It is.
Right. So can you talk about that a little bit to set the stage
Sure.
for folks as to why this is so messed up, not just in terms of the beef that you're eating and the quality of it,
Right.
but actually why that happens way upstream?
It really does. And where it really happens is at the processing plant. So a rancher like this wonderful ranch I'm on today, they can raise great beef, but when they take it to the slaughterhouse, that it's actually, then it goes into the hands of the big four corporations that really are centralized, really set everything that happens there. And if they haven't followed the rules they've been mandated to follow according to government programs, then their beef doesn't get bought. They're shut out of the system. So they have to follow certain rules, certain immunization schedules, things like that. They have to use feeding schedules and processes they don't necessarily think are the best, but they have to do it to follow the rules in order to be part of the system. And that's really where the capture is. And once it goes in the processing house, it's out of their hands. The processors will actually use that beef to get the highest price for them, but not necessarily the highest quality for the consumers. And that's where the capture is. And it's the ranchers. It's not necessarily droughts that drive are hurting ranchers. It's actually the financial system. And that's where the real pain comes in. That's what's really crushing. And it's causing 57 ranches a day to go under. 57. So we're losing our ranches. We're losing them forever. And I don't know if we can ever get them back. They are under attack from that side. They're also under attack just for keeping a hold of their land. So their land is under attack just to taxation, just to development coming in. If you look around the Austin area, Austin's expanding so fast that if you're a rancher on the edges of Austin, the temptation to sell and go into a huge development project is too great. And heritage ranches that have been around forever can't continue. Up in the panhandle, it's even worse. There's that, but there's also huge AI installations that are going in place that are taking over the land there, that are taking the water in order to run those AIs. And so they're replacing our food security within this nation with capture of the land, capture of the resources, capture of the ranchers, that if they don't play by the rules, they get decimated. And the suicide rate of ranchers right now is greater than our veterans. And the veterans, as we know, are suffering so greatly. So it's people's lives are in danger, communities are in danger, and our national security is in danger as a result of this as well.
So that stat is kind of mind-blowing in terms of the suicides. Like I had no idea about that. Obviously, the situation with our veterans is already deplorable.
Yes, and absolutely.
Like, that's a national embarrassment in my mind. Mm-hmm. And the people who, you know, put their lives up to go and fight for our country. Like, those are people that we need to take care of. And on the other hand, now you've got ranchers who are committing their lives to something different, but also incredibly important, which is making sure that people have quality food to put in their bodies.
Yeah.
And I think especially right now with everything happening with the, you know, kind of Robert F. Kennedy and all this stuff that's being exposed. I mean, at least the food pyramid finally got flipped, right?
That's a
but
huge
for so
benefit.
Many years,
yes.
Nobody's really like, I feel like there's been almost a war on healthy food. There's been a lot of health food out there,
right,
but not actual healthy food. So, I mean,
no.
Is this how deep does this go? How far back does this go? I mean, and like, how did it even get so bad like it is today?
It goes back to the 1930s, to be honest. That's when ag subsidies really came into play. And ever since then, the whole ag industry has been addicted to ag subsidies from the government. And that was one point. Another point was, guess when? Early 70s. Why would that be? That's when the whole debasement or the decoupling of the US dollar from gold happened. And there was a push to have cheaper food. So we're going through massive inflation in the early 70s by design through engineered monetary debasement. And that cheapening of food caused an addiction to these subsidies that has been just captured the entire industry. The other thing is the average age of a rancher right now, a cattle rancher, is 67 years old.
Wow.
The kids aren't taking over the ranch because they're going to the city to get the big tech job, to get all that, and leaving the ranch behind. And so that's a huge, huge problem as well. And we would love to welcome the young people back to the ranch, be close to the land, be working the land, be regenerating the land and the soil in a positive way. And we can do that through these amazing land tools called cattle.
So that's kind of wild in terms of that average age, right? I mean, that's like you basically, you've got people who've been doing this their whole lives, but there's nobody coming in to basically refresh that crop of ranchers, so to speak.
These are heritage ranches that we're losing forever. And you can imagine if you're the steward of your family's ranch and then you lose it, there's the suicide right there. You're the kid that messed up. How devastating is that?
I mean, it's frankly just like it's messed up, right? I mean, this is, and okay, can we talk a little bit about the USDA and how kind of that contributes to this whole thing? Because it's one thing for, you know, people might want to blame this just on the big greedy corporations, but it's like the reason that those corporations are able to exert such influence, become so centralized, it's all about that regulatory moat, right? It's about that regulatory capture and the influence that they have there. So can we dig into that a little bit as well?
Who sets the rules for our regulations? Is it our lawmakers? Are the lawmakers doing it for the people? Or is it the corporations that get regulated that set the rules? And that's what's really happened here. So the rules are set up to enforce this centralization, to enforce the big boys keep winning the game and the little guys to be wiped out in the process. So that's one aspect of it. But there's much more.
And, I mean, well, and maybe it's worth, we can, I think what we should maybe do now is we should talk a little bit about, we can get deeper into the problem as well. But I think you've set the tone well that there is this centralization, there is this regulatory moat and regulatory capture, that the beef that you're getting at the store is maybe not what you think it is, whether it's being soaked in water or it's saying, you know, American beef, but it's not actually in America. There's all this stuff here. So there's all these problems, and I want to kind of get into some of each of those a little bit more deeply. But maybe first we should just touch on at least the solution. We should touch on the big news that came out just today, just released, I mean, a couple of hours ago, right before we went live here on this stream. Can you talk about what you guys are doing, and then we'll get back into some of these other problems and how, you know, this gets fixed. But talk about what you guys just announced today, because I think it is really massive.
It is. And thank you so much for amplifying the message, to putting it out there, and also doing this right now as well. Today, Texas Slim, the man alone, is the sole owner of a domain known as beef.com. And it was a battle to get this. It was a lot of big players from around the world that wanted to get this. The big guys wanted it. The previous owners of this domain, I don't know who they are, but I know that they're wonderful people because they wanted to go into the right hands. They wanted to help the independent ranchers, and they trusted Texas Slim to be that man. And so that was an amazing process. It was about an 18-month battle for him personally to get through it, and a lot of negotiations, It was just an amazing transfer of this domain into hands that are going to treat it right. It's not centralizing it for money. It's actually centralizing the security of the independent ranchers. They now have a digital ranch that's safe, that's protected, that has a firewall fence around it to protect their data, to protect their processes so they don't go into the hands of the big boys, that we actually have a chance to do regenerative agriculture right in America and around the world, because this is a global domain. This is the Michael Saylor of beef, is what it is. It really is.
I like that. And I mean, this, for folks who don't know, like, this is a big deal to get a domain like this. Can you kind of talk about the extent? Because I think people might just think, oh, it's a website. Cool. You know, what's the big deal?
Right. We could have, you know, ElSalvadorBeef.com. And the longer your domain name is, the less valuable it is. You can grab that for $14 probably off of GoDaddy or someplace like that. But a very short English name is highly valuable. Michael Saylor has hope.com. Texas Slim has beef.com. Four letters, super, super valuable. What it also does is it gives authority. It's a place where people can go, oh, these are actually the real guys that know what they're talking about, that are here for the people. And it's a place that we have an open mat for people to participate in whatever they want. We have an open door for independent ranchers. We have an open door for consumers that are concerned with healthy food. Where can I acquire that? People that are concerned with regenerative agriculture, and how can we actually restore our land back to fertile soils without using fertilizers, actually using cows as the best tool to build soil. And I've seen it with my own eyes on ranches in Colorado and in Texas.
Wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Ledin makes that possible. The global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, Ledin has issued over $10 billion in loans since 2018 and has a perfect record of protecting client assets. Why is a Ledin loan different? Well, with custodied loans, collateral is not lent out to generate interest. No credit checks, no monthly payments, apply in minutes and repay whenever you want, with zero penalties. And proof of reserves reports verified by a top accounting firm are published every 6 months. Ledin gives Bitcoin holders a secure, transparent way to unlock liquidity without selling. Learn more at ledin.io/walker. That's ledin.io/walker. If you're hodling Bitcoin personally or for a business, here's the uncomfortable truth. You probably don't have insurance. Most policies exclude Bitcoin, and the ones that don't, they only pay you back in fiat. What's the point of that if you need to claim a loss when number go up? That's not insurance, that's liquidation. Now there's another option, BDIC. They're building an insurance marketplace on the Bitcoin standard. One Bitcoin lost equals one Bitcoin paid. They've integrated with Liana Business for enterprise self-custody, with personal wallet coverage options coming later this year. If you care about protecting your Bitcoin as Bitcoin, sign up for the waitlist at bdic.io/walker. That's bdic.io/walker. Insurance on the Bitcoin standard. Blockstream Jade Plus delivers robust security With fully open source hardware and software, its unique Genuine Check feature ensures your device is authentic, giving you ultimate peace of mind. With versatile connectivity options, including Bluetooth, USB-C, built-in camera, and SD card, Jade Plus offers unparalleled flexibility in managing your Bitcoin. Whether you prefer wireless convenience or air-gapped security, Jade has you covered. Its innovative design features a durable metal case, a bright 1.9-inch color screen, and intuitive navigation buttons that make managing your Bitcoin straightforward and enjoyable. Jade Plus also supports secure, air-gapped transactions via QR code signing using the Jade Link storage device, keeping your Bitcoin safe without compromising convenience. Visit store.blockstream.com and use my coupon code WALKER for an exclusive 10% discount on your Blockstream Jade Plus. Protect your Bitcoin, sleep better, stack harder. I think that people discount that a little bit. They forget they've been, you know, kind of fed some of these lies about, you know, maybe cow farts are, you know, boiling the oceans, basically, and all these things. Cows have been kind of demonized. Beef has been demonized. I mean, the World Economic Forum is going on right now in Davos. And I mean, that's really what, you know, the old Klaus Schwab with wanting people to eat the bugs and be happy. Yeah. Like this is, we've been in kind of this weird simulation world where it's like 1984, you know, up is down, right is wrong, truth is lies, you know.
Right.
And I feel like we've gotten so far away from just basic common sense and things that worked for many, many, many generations really, really well and allowed people to eat good, clean, healthy food, and to not absolutely ravage the land in the process.
All right.
So I want to get into some of the regenerative side of things too, but maybe can we get into a little bit more detail about what is the plan for utilizing this new domain in terms of what does this actually enable and why does this kind of matter for the industry? How does this fix some of the problems you touched on earlier, which we'll get into a little bit more depth on later on?
Absolutely. So as I was mentioning, ranchers, when they go to the slaughterhouse, they don't have a chance to set the price. They're just told, here's your price today. And it's devastating. But now we have a new marketplace, an exchange, where actually independent ranchers can come and they can actually buy and sell and trade their cattle in a place that's safe, secure, where there's actually an open and free market of supply and demand that actually is honest and fair and backed by Bitcoin, true, honest, sound money as well.
And so that is that really the core plan here is it is creating a marketplace for this.
It's a marketplace, but it's much more than that. So for quite a while, the Beef Initiative has been exposing the lies. So if you want to go back through our whole feed, we talk about all the problems of the beef industry in great detail and the problems with mislabeling of beef and that, and country of origin is another huge problem. We think we're getting American beef. Is it really? Probably not. And there's ways you can find that out. What is the beef patty that you're actually eating, is that from one cow? Not likely. It could be hundreds or even thousands of cows in one single beef patty. So when you get it from an independent rancher, you're getting it from a cow. I know, it's rather disgusting. It's vats and vats of cows that are just globbed up. And talk about 1984. That's the awful thing. You don't want to ever see how the sausage is made, you know? And so getting it more direct, getting it clean and pure and natural, getting it nutrient dense. That's where it's really at, a nutrient-dense product. So there's an exchange. There's more that can just be exchanged than just beef. Beef is really an energy cycle. So it's actually sunlight to grass with rain and soil that goes into a cow. It can remediate problems with damaged land and actually go from just this much topsoil to 8 inches of black chocolate cake-like soil that's rich with biology, with the microbiome of the soil. And if you dump a bunch of chemicals on there that are come from foreign countries, you're just killing all that microbiome and you're actually killing the land. It's actually cows that are the tool that does that right. So we have information on that. We have information on the health, and we're also open to ideas. We just launched our website today. There's all that's there is a 22-minute video that explains what we're doing that also has a place to put your email in there. We invite you to include your email and give us your ideas. It's a digital ranch, and on a ranch, you have a lot of different activities that are productive. We want to hear your productive ideas, and we want to be part of those things that are best for the people. So it's a place for the people to regain sovereignty over their food system, their food security, and their freedom, their actual sovereignty.
And to clarify, this is not a digital real estate like in the NFT sense, right?
No, God, no.
Just had to be clear for everybody.
That's very true. And you know, Texas Slim's been a Bitcoiner for a long time, and he's believes in that technology, and he's trying to bridge that gap between sound money and sound regenerative ranching practices as well. What we're actually doing to try to make the beef better, to make the cows live the healthiest, most productive life, and then they just have one single bad day and they don't ever know it's coming. So their consciousness is safe in that as well.
It's nice. And okay, so we've sort of we got a little bit into identifying the problem, but we've talked about now a little bit of the solution as well. I wanted to make sure we got this in just kind of in the first part of this this stream here in this episode. Okay. It'll be broadcast out everywhere after the fact, just so that people at least get some of that dense information right at the start. And so you can go check out beef.com. It'll redirect you right now to the landing page that you guys have as you guys are building out this site. But let's go. Okay. Now that we've done that, let's take a step back a little bit. Why does beef even matter? Why should people even care?
Like, really, you know, really? I know. It's a really, really good question. I don't think people understand that. So we just, the government just flipped the food pyramid. So they said saturated fast for all of our lives. Those are really bad. And then fruits, vegetables, and grains are the top thing that humans can do to help their bodies. But what are our brains made of? They're made of fat. And what's the best thing for those brains? Saturated fat. It was just told by our government, said saturated fat is the best thing we can possibly eat. What has the highest saturated fat on earth? It's beef and nothing else. Everything else is a far, far distant from that. So it is the actual food that's healthy for our brains. It's healthy for our bodies. It actually, it's the food of life, beef. It's the food of life.
I like that. And okay, so beef matters. Like, you know, we now have returned a little bit of sanity to the food pyramid, even though it was a bit of a South Park meme. You know, just flip it upside down, which is just beautiful, you know, mm-hmm. life imitating satire. But it's yes. true. Like, at least there's some recognition that, hey, turns out, and I think this is where maybe it's worth going back into the problem a little bit. So much of it comes back to these massive government subsidy programs, which completely broke incentives. So can we go a little bit deeper mm-hmm. on that? You touched on it earlier, but I think it really bears repeating because this is one of those market distortions that people may think, oh, government, what's the worst that could happen, right? That's the government's just helping the industry that needs it. But it's a market distortion and it ends up causing more harm than good. So let's go a little bit deeper on that. What more can you tell us about how it got so bad as it is today?
It got bad because fiat is an addiction and fiat is not real money. As we know as Bitcoiners, that the addiction is, hey, I'm struggling as a rancher. I need to sign up for next year's program. What's the program going to be? What I need to do to qualify for that program? And what guidelines do I need to follow? So it's a capture. It's a fiat capture. And it's misallocation of capital. As Bitcoiners, we know this as well, that when you have money that anybody can print for free, but everybody else has to work really hard for it, well, the ones working really hard are the independent ranchers, and they're working really, really hard to squeeze out every bit of value they can out of their entire operations. They have very tight processes and procedures, input controls of what the cows are eating, and then also the whole processing of that is super important to them. And when you have misallocated capital, it disincentivizes good behavior in all ways. And it creates a problem that's pernicious, that's embedded, and that captures people in ways they don't understand necessarily. And that's a huge problem. It's a place where Bitcoiners have a lot of great information, but because Bitcoiners are the way they are, they can be kind of repellent to the ranchers, actually, because we say sometimes horrible things like have fun, stay poor, and things like that, which is not very useful for bringing new people in and helping them understand, hey, you've got a huge, huge problem, but us geeks over here on the internet, we actually figured out the solution. This guy, Satoshi, he actually came up with this magical money that's engineered money to help protect your capital. And ranchers understand capital very, very well. That's what it's all about, is how do you have capital? How do you deploy that effectively? And how do you store capital? And out here in the fields, there's huge hails of bay, which is the stored capital for this winter. As the cows need to be kept fed, they've already pre-planned that with hay bales, and they can feed that throughout the winter. So introducing ranchers to the pristine capital of Bitcoin, and it's a way to protect their heritage, to protect their ranches, to go on for generations that they can actually pass it on, is an amazing benefit that they don't quite fully understand yet, and that we as Bitcoiners need to help guide them with that gently and with grace and with strength, actually show up and deploy our Bitcoin in a way that we can actually make a difference in this world. Because we'll say things like fix the money, fix the world, but there's a step in between those two. It's fix the money, do something really useful with that money, and then you can possibly fix the world. And this do something really useful, that's the part we're talking about. Beef.com is a home, a place to boots on the ground. How can you actually help them understand and help deploy it? And Bitcoiners don't necessarily have to sell their Bitcoin to do that. There's other ways to use your Bitcoin that can be helpful without having to decrease your stack.
Is it fair to say, because I'm just thinking of this, I mean, it seems that raising beef is just by its nature a low time preference activity. Like you're growing an animal. I mean, it seems that there's a really natural alignment in terms of just the frame with which these cattle ranchers are approaching life, that they're forced to approach that way. They have to think long term. They have to plan ahead. They can't think about the next minute. They have to think about long in the future. But it seems that because of all of this burdensome regulation, because of all the regulatory capture, they are forced to think much more, you know, right here, right now, instead of focusing on what they should be, which is the long term health of their cattle until they go to the slaughter. I mean, is that fair? But it seems that alignment is there with Bitcoin very naturally.
It is. And actually, the funny parallel between ranching and Bitcoin is the cow life cycle. It's a 4-year cycle, just like the 4-year cycle in Bitcoin, the halving cycle as well. So there's that thing. But there's also a long term as well. If you talk about ranches that were really important in the industry, the ranch that's most important is the JA Ranch up in the Panhandle. It was started by the most legendary of cowboys ever, is Charles Goodnight. And Charles Goodnight came into an amazing canyon. He was a Texas Ranger. So he was a guy out doing reconnaissance out in the field and found this canyon, or this canyon was there. And he looked at it and says, this is actually the perfect ranch. At the time, there was a group of folks, the Comanches, that were were defending their homeland. They were. And the U.S. government did many horrible things to them. And in that story, the Charles Goodnight story is one that Bitcoiners need to look at and understand who Charles Goodnight was. And his time preference was so low that that ranch is still operating today. It's still, and that was the 1870s, the early 1870s, that he established that ranch with just 6 cattle. And it grew to the largest, most productive. And you know what ruined it all? Finance. The British financial system came in, and that was actually where the Achilles heel of that entire ranch. There was a British man, the JA is Mr. Adair, and he took 2/3 of the profit away from the ranch, but Charles Goodnight and his team did all the work and only got 1/3 profit. So the financial side of that ranch was the Achilles heel of it for all this time.
Is that the case with a lot of these older, like, I don't know what you want to call them, like legacy ranches? That they've just been, have they been forced to, like, they were operating obviously sustainably in both financially and like from a, you know, ecological standpoint for a while. Have they just been forced into kind of is this just one of the things that fiat has ruined? Is that what you're getting at here?
It's ruined, but they've also, because cattlemen are so persistent, that they have survived despite all the financial hardships that they've actually faced and all the hard work they've done. And if we look at then these ranches, we also highlight through the Beef Initiative. So go and look into these stories. The XIT Ranch, it was the entire panhandle of Texas was given to some Chicago bankers in exchange for a building in the center of Texas, the Austin State Capitol, a huge, beautiful granite building. Texas was land rich and money poor at the time, so they traded the panhandle in exchange for a granite building. And it's a beautiful building. We just toured it, and it's quite phenomenal. That's one story. Another story is the King Ranch in South Texas, where my family was doing ranching as well. And the King Ranch is a huge swath of land. It was purchased for pennies on the, like 20 cents an acre or something. And it's the size of a 1/7 of New Jersey. It's about the size of it. I'm not sure what that is in acres, but it's a huge ranch that still exists today. And it went through hardships as well. Yeah, you've heard of that one. And we were just touring that one. And it's an amazing ranch, an amazing story. It was a really hard, hot place to raise cattle. They tried to bring English cattle over that didn't do well there. So they built their whole breed by themselves called the Santa Gertrudis. It's one of the most successful breeds in the world today. And they developed there on the King Ranch. And it's a phenomenal breed, and they would have been destroyed by finances as well, but they happened to find this substance on their underneath their property called oil, and it was actually oil that helped save the ranch in many ways. And so it's an amazing story as well. These are worth knowing about and worth looking into. This is the real cowboy heritage of our country, and it's worth knowing.
So you mentioned some of these bigger ranches that have these kind of like well-known stories that you guys have covered through the Beef Initiative. What about the smaller ranchers, though? Because they're not the ones who necessarily have the big, you know, the long, super long history. Maybe they have a long history, but they don't have the notoriety. Maybe they don't have as many, you know, thousands of acres, whatever. What's their story? And do they have a set of challenges, I assume, that is probably pretty unique compared to these large ranches that have access to, they have their own problems, but they still have access to more capital, outside capital, if they want it, than some of these smaller ranchers. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, let me give you two good examples. When we were on our King Ranch tour, our tour guide is a guy by the name of Gabe, and he's the tour guide on the ranch, but also he has his own little ranch off to the side, his own little piece of parcel, and he's got his cows running on that, and he's suffering due to finances and rain. So it's real tough down there, and he would love some more rainfall, but also the finances of it, it's hard to meet it, because he's also using these programs to kind of get ahead in life, and he's being driven out, and he doesn't even know it I don't know if he doesn't know it. I'm not saying that, but he's struggling because of the system that he's captured inside of. Another rancher is a good friend of mine, Jason Rick in Crawford, Colorado, and he's a first generation rancher. So he didn't inherit from his family. He was a miner, a coal miner. Then he was a military, fought in our U.S. military and is a proud veteran. And then he says, I want to get back to the farm. So he took over his wife's family's farm, and that was some acreage, but it wasn't enough to really make it profitable. So he went out and he got other people's land and put his cattle on it. So he contracted out land and ran cattle on other people's land in a regenerative way, and took his wife's family's soil from that much of topsoil to now it's that deep, rich chocolate. And he's a good friend. He's a great Bitcoiner. He's one of the founding members of the space in Denver. So he's one of those bridges between Bitcoin and rancher, and he's got a great story to tell. And he's a founding member of the Beef Initiative as well. So he's part of the advisory board of the Beef Initiative.
So can you talk a little bit more about what are these different like contracts that these ranchers will enter into? Because I think this is kind of like a foreign thing for people who either didn't grow up around it or just are not familiar with it. How is it exactly that these ranchers are sort of getting like trapped into these situations? Are they basically like offered a certain amount of money up front to then agree on a set of prices later, or how exactly does that work?
It's just that money is tight. And if they go to they have two places to go right now. They can either go to the government and be part of a program and get money that way that's doled out as it's doled out, and the details are a lot. Or they can go to the local banker and say, hey, will you give me a loan? And if you're just running by and you're just doing you're just getting by, people don't tend to want to give you money as much. But there's a whole pool of capital that they haven't had access to yet, and that pool of capital is Bitcoiners. And Bitcoiners have a strong incentive to help share that capital with ranchers, because it's actually that third step: fix the money, do something useful with it, then fix the world. And there's a huge opportunity that I want to talk more about here, but I'm not sure if I answered your whole question yet.
No. You did. And so I was specifically asking sort of about these government programs. Mm-hmm. These are ones where they agree to meet certain guidelines, I assume. Mm-hmm. They agree to go by the various USDA standards, and then they're either given some sort of a grant and or loans with certain conditions. I just wanted some more details about that, like those specific programs.
So the programs are, and this is, I'm the Bitcoiner advisor to the Beef Initiative, so there's ranchers that have more details.
High level is that
they have to follow certain procedures on their property. And we've been through government regulations where, think of it like the HOA. This will probably be the easiest way. When you have an HOA, what have you done to your house today? Are you the right color of taupe? Have you mowed your lawn correctly? This is an analogy of what they're also going through. Have they hit the right kind of weight? Are they doing the right sort of thing? But then the capture actually happens when they go take their cattle to market, and they're being overwhelmed with technology and these big corporations that basically they don't have a shot against all of that.
Okay. That makes a ton of sense. And then I interrupted you a little bit. Let's talk then about kind of this connection that you guys are forging between ranchers, independent ranchers, and Bitcoiners. Because I think some people may hear this and say, like, you know, are you saying Bitcoin fixes this? The Bitcoiners fix this? You know, how does this actually work? What meaningful difference does this actually make for these ranchers who are out there trying to make ends meet, trying to do an honest day's work, trying to provide for their families, but are running up into all of either these regulatory pressures, financing pressures, et cetera, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Here's what I'd say for Bitcoin. This is my spiel to Bitcoiners. So as Bitcoiners, a lot of us are carnivores already. We understand that. We love that. That's actually changed our life in many, many ways. And many Bitcoiners are actually buying their beef from independent ranchers. And they're doing it through the Beef Initiative. We have a website called beefmaps.com where you can actually locate a local rancher, go shake their hand, have a relationship. And that's a phenomenal thing to do. That's a great way to help. But it's just the beginning of what's needed, actually. And here's the thing. You have Bitcoin, but you can't eat your Bitcoin. You actually, at some point, you need to acquire it by some means. You can go to the grocery store, you can buy there, and you're going to get whatever you get. You can form these relationships with independent ranchers, and that's a better alliance, and you're getting the beef you want. But if that rancher goes out of business, then what do? You're in big trouble. What could a Bitcoiner that has a larger stack than some others? Well, they could actually fund and finance more cattle for that rancher. And instead of going to a government program, they come to the Bitcoin program where, hey, I want to put 10 cattle on your ranch and that I'm actually putting my cattle in cold storage on your property and you're actually raising my cattle for me. And when I want to acquire one of those, when I actually want to harvest those to fill my freezers, then I'm actually harvesting my own cattle from you. And that's an injection of liquidity that would make all the difference for ranchers, all the difference. And if you want to take it one level bigger, if you want to actually be a really sovereign Bitcoiner, what could you actually do? Well, you build a citadel. You build your citadel. It looks like a homestead. It's a piece of property that you've secured, and you've secured Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You secure the air. You secure the water, the food, the shelter, the telecommunications, and everything you need to be safe there, but securing your beef, you're not gonna have your homestead, your citadel, depend on carrots and celery out of your garden. You actually want to have beef. You actually want that saturated fat. So how do you do that? You build a Bitcoin citadel ranch. And as Bitcoiners, we're all kind of IT geek guys. Do we really know how to ranch? Some do. That's cool, but most don't. What can you do about that? Well, align with a rancher or Texas Slim actually has Texas Slim Land and Cattle Company that just released, and it's a turnkey ranch solution. So you can actually get a piece of property. We'll actually have our team of experts come and help build your ranch, manage your ranch. If it's in El Salvador, we'll actually employ Salvadorans to actually be your ranchers for you. And we're employing Salvadorans. We're making everything. It's a win, 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 win. And that's the ultimate sovereignty I think you can reach as a Bitcoin. And I think that's new information that Bitcoiners haven't really thought through fully yet that can actually change the world.
Okay, so there's a number of things I want to pick out there.
Okay.
One of them is just an analogy that came to my mind when you talked about kind of like paying for your cattle to be on a rancher's ranch. It reminds me of like you're paying to host miners with a company,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's kind of like that. Like you're paying to host miners. They're running the infrastructure. They're doing that. They're taking, you know, whatever cut from that. But ultimately, you're getting the product of that, either non-KYC Bitcoin or beef.
Like, precisely.
Fair analogy?
Precisely. The exact correct analogy. You're so smart, Walker, by the way.
Yeah, I try my best. But so the other thing is you mentioned El Salvador. We haven't talked about that yet. What are you guys doing there? Why were you guys just down there?
It's for a really big reason. Just before Bitcoin Historica that just happened down there, the government had their own Bitcoin conference. Texas Slim, on his own, actually negotiated a contract with the country of El Salvador to relaunch and restart their entire beef industry from the ground up. The country doesn't have food security. We've been living down there. We've been buying meat. Well, we brought beef last time, but we've had to buy some beef at the grocery store, and it's not great. It's the skinny, stringy, Central South American type beef that you get there. And all the beef that you buy isn't coming from the country of El Salvador. It's coming from its neighbors, Nicaragua and Honduras and other places as well. So they need food security because the country of El Salvador is actually its own citadel. It's a Bitcoiner citadel and it's a freedom citadel. And so they know, Bukele knows this is really, really important. His Ministry of Agriculture is dedicated to do this and they're doing a fantastic job. The acting director or minister of agriculture is a guy named Oscar, and he's committed to really making this happen. So the contract is to bring cattle from Texas down to El Salvador and bring the very best genetics that we have from Texas down to El Salvador and make a huge difference. And there's already great water there. There's fantastic grass there. The soil is volcanic. It's some of the most wonderful soil in the world. There's volcanoes there, and you don't want to put them on the hillside of a volcano, but there's tons of pasture there too. And they have areas that are already ranching. It's part of their heritage, the ranching. It's places like Santa Ana and some other parts of the nation that they have a ranching heritage, but they've just been through civil war and gang warfare for decades, and it's been just devastated all their infrastructure. It's demoralized them, but Bukele has brought hope to that country. It's brought initiative. It's brought entrepreneurship. It's brought a brain trust to their beach, where we have a bunch of Bitcoiners trying to figure this out at a technological level, but also in a really collaborative and innovative way as well. And it's the difference between working with a government that's fighting you and a government that's opening you open arms to say, hey, come here, make this place better with us. And that's the partnership there.
I mean, that's awesome. Has this been widely publicized yet?
That's why we're talking today, Walker.
The El Salvador thing too, though. Like, I knew about, like, you know, you told me about the beef.com, but I didn't know that the El Salvador thing was like, I mean, this is happening like right now, basically.
Right now. And it hasn't got the press it needs. So we're talking about it here. And then beef.com amplifies that entire message to the world in a way that is tangible, that can be seen, that's real. We have a digital ranch in order to run these operations. And it's not just El Salvador. We have requests from every continent. We have requests in Africa and Europe and in South America, Central America, here in the United States as well.
I mean, it's really cool to see this, because I think, again, this isn't just about American beef, right? This is about fixing the industry, fixing the incentives here in America, but it's something that needs to happen like everywhere. You know,
I mean,
is there right now a good model global? Like, is there anywhere that you can point to globally where they have a better model for cattle? Like, right now, is it all pretty broken wherever you go? Is my question.
It's broken everywhere. It's broken everywhere, and it's worse in other places, some places than others. But El Salvador is our chance for the entire beef industry to prove the correct model, to prove the way that ranchers would like to actually run their cattle, to actually be as natural and close to the ground, to give the cattle a great life and a paradise. The rainfall in El Salvador is four times what it is in South Texas. And so it's a great place. It's a paradise for cattle to live in, actually. And if we do that right there, if we show that the way doing it the rancher way is the right way, then everybody becomes jealous of that way. And every country is going to want that. The only people that are against freedom, that are against free speech, are tyrants. And those that aren't, they want to be part of this. And so we want to talk to those people that want freedom, that want sovereignty, that want food security for their people, for their local communities, but for their entire nation as well.
I think this is really powerful, because this is one of those things where if you want to really have a free population, you need to be able to have a healthy population, right? A population that's completely dependent on the pharmaceutical industry, on the agricultural lobbies, and all these things. That's not like even if you have free speech, even if you have the right to have guns, which you know, thank God we do here in America, still your most precious form of private property, your own body, is being ransacked by what you are putting into it. If you cannot find good quality foods, you know, like, food is the best medicine, right? That's where it all starts with. It starts with what you put into your body. And it just feels like we've gotten so far away in the US and elsewhere from just common sense around this stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, we talked earlier about the kind of the vilification of beef and the fact that this is, you know, again, cow, like, literally talking about culling cow herds because of their farts. And it's like, dear Lord, like, just, it just seems we've lost the plot so much. And it seems like what you guys are doing here is just trying to bring a little bit of sanity and common sense back to this and give some dignity to the ranchers who have dedicated their lives to this.
Absolutely. And if we look at tyranny, when tyranny pops up around the world throughout history, what's the first thing that they go after? It's the food system. And when we've seen dictators rise, when we've seen communism rise, it's the food that they attack first, they wipe out, and then they have total control, because if the people can't eat, they can't fight back. And it's disgusting, it's awful, and it's not something that anybody that loves freedom wants to be part of. An example is Oprah. She came after the beef industry a number of years ago, and she was talking about how awful it was. And it's a story for people to look up. But the independent beef ranchers went after her with lawyers, and they took it all down. They made her take it back, and they won the lawsuit. So there's another story to dig into.
Well, now she's shilling for Ozempic, so you know that's kind of what you expect, right?
Yeah, that's really good for people.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there's not going to be any unforeseen consequences to all of that.
Okay, never has been.
So talking a little bit more about kind of what you guys see as the vision for this, because we're talking about America. We're also talking about El Salvador. We're talking about other countries now. Mm-hmm. Is what you guys are building with the Beef Initiative? I mean, is the goal to be able to have, if I want to be able to get El Salvador beef, like in the future, is that what kind of you're enabling is like really, it's not just, it can be local, but it can also be global. Is that the idea?
It can, but El Salvador needs to feed its own people first. And that's the real goal, is that we're building the food system for the people of El Salvador. And I think that can happen very, very quickly. We have a plan that we're not unveiling completely right now, but we have the best experts in the world working on it, working closely with the government of El Salvador. I was shocked when I was in the Ministry of Agriculture offices about how open and how willing they were to be servants of their people, to actually be people that want to take care of their people. And it was like government like I've never experienced before. And it was shocking to me and encouraging in a deep, deep way. And Bitcoiners are going to accuse me of being a statist by saying that. But hey, we got to start somewhere. We have to have a beachhead to actually start freedom on. And El Salvador seems to be our best place to do that. And Bukele, being the person he is the leader that can do that in a great way.
What, just to get a little bit deeper into the El Salvador side of things, and we'll bring it back to the U.S. of A. But is the core issue there? I mean, obviously there have been a lot of issues, like the fact that the country was not safe until Bukele took office. Like that's mm-hmm. kind of makes it hard to do anything with a long-term mindset when you're just worried about, are you going to survive the next day? But you mentioned you're bringing Texas cattle with these, specific genetics down there. Mm-hmm. Is it an issue of just they didn't have the quality stock down there? Besides, on top of like the fact that it was the murder capital of the world or whatever until he took office, what was the kind of core issue there? Or what are they really looking to solve? Is it just a matter of, hey, we need better cows with better genetics to start kind of building out these herds?
Let me tell one of the heartbreaking stories we got when we were down there last trip. This wonderful woman that had a huge cattle operation down there. She had hundreds of cattle, and the men came to her property with machine guns and shot her entire herd in front of her face right there, just slaughtered them. And why? To decrease food security, to take over, to control. And it was heartbreaking. You can imagine, just imagine dropping into some country that's authoritarian with a Ferrari and see how long you're going to hold on to that Ferrari for. It's going to be gone in a second. So if you come down to a country like that with the best genetic cow, you think you're going to hang on to that cow? No, it's either going to be taken or killed immediately. And so they've gotten the scraps of the genetics, but we have the best genetics in the world. It's AI to AI, artificial insemination to artificial intelligence. That's the beef intelligence that we're talking about. And it's artificial insemination that ramps up genetics of cows that actually gets the best quality beef for humans. And how you finish those cows off matters a lot. If you just feed them corn and some other low value products like that, you're going to get low value beef out of it. But we're talking about inputs that are all natural, organic, that are high quality inputs, and you feed them the right sort of proteins, you feed them omega-3, and then you actually have omega-3 cattle, and you have super healthy cattle that's beyond grass-fed, grass-finished. It's actually high quality, both for the cow and for the human that eats that processed cow.
Okay, I was not expecting AI to AI to mean what it did there, but that's fantastic. I'm going to have to save that one for a little party joke there. Okay, so what else, as we kind of zoom out here, I think it's fascinating what's happening down there in El Salvador. I think this makes a lot of sense. Like now that you've told me this, that they're moving in this direction, it's like because there is finally some actual physical security there, you can now make investments in bringing cows in. It's a horrific story of what happened to that woman down there, but these are the stories you hear from anytime you go to El Salvador. You hear about people who talked about what it was like before. Mm-hmm. It's sadly not anything new, right? It's tragic, but it was par for the course down there, right?
Indeed, it was. The other part of infrastructure they're missing in that country, and that we're also missing here in Texas as well, is small microprocessing plants. And so this is part of that capture also. When you go to the big processing plants, you have no choice because you're going to the Walmart of beef processing. But It used to be the case in Texas that each county had its own microprocessing plant, and the local ranchers would bring it to the county one, and those have slowly closed down. The devastation across Texas is evident. I used to drive around Texas with my family all the time, and we'd go to these cute Texas towns with the courthouse in the center of the square. They were vibrant places. The whole square was filled with shops. There's restaurants, all of that. Now they're largely dead. And it's tragic. In my own lifetime, I've seen the devastation of it. And what's the difference between now and then? They lost those microprocessing plants. That took the heart out of it. That, the dollar stores and the Walmarts just destroyed it. So it's fiat attack on our culture, on our society, on our heritage, on our people. And in El Salvador, they have none of those microprocessing plants. The good news is we can build those quickly. We have the templates. We have the models. We can drop them in fast. We even have the private funding to actually build them quickly. And yeah, they're going to cost $1 million, $2 million, $2.5 million to build one of these things, but there's people lining up. This is another place that Bitcoiners with a large stack can make a huge difference. And it's actually a good investment. It's actually a good economic investment, and it's actually a good security investment as well for them and their communities around them.
Why did we see these disappear in Texas specifically? Was this just because regulations changed, or
no,
what was the reasoning?
It's the Walmart Dollar Tree story. Walmart comes to town, all the small mom-and-pop shops die. Dollar Tree comes, they die. The big, huge, big four meat processing plants come to town, and they suck up all that business, and the little ones die. It's a fiat capture. It's misallocated capital, and it's designed to bring down freedom, bring down security. If we're fighting for freedom, here's how we can restore it in our own country and countries around the world.
So tell me more about what kind of this marketplace is going to look like. Because obviously the Beef Initiative has already been doing a lot of stuff in terms of connecting Bitcoiners with ranchers. You mentioned beefmaps.com. But how does that change? How is that augmented or enhanced with this new kind of path forward that you guys have?
In cattleman speak, it's called the rancher has a new bid. If they only have one place to go take their cattle to, you can only take your cattle down to Walmart. You only have one, you only have the price Bitcoins that Walmart's going to give you. You can only have the quality that Walmart's going to give you. And I don't know. I don't like to get my produce at Walmart. I would rather go to a farmer's market and get it. So beef.com is the farmer's market for independent ranchers to buy and sell and trade their beef in a fair way. It's getting back to small town heritage, but with a big tech supporting and securing it and securing the data. And data is the product. We all know this now. What was Facebook? It wasn't ever free. The cost of it was your freedom. The cost of it was your entire life being known by big government and big corporations. So there's a cost to freedom, and that cost is tragic. And data is the place that we're being tracked, we're being traced, we're being controlled. It is the CBDC that, you know, you're living in an open air panopticon prison. If they can track every single thing you do, and if you do something they don't like, suddenly they turn your money off, they turn off your access to food, they turn off your freedom. And by having our own data in a place that's secured with a digital fence around our digital ranch, that suddenly the ranchers have a place that they can buy, sell, and trade with freedom, with security, and the knowledge that they're not giving away the ranch, as it were, through data, through AI.
So in terms of just, I guess, like overall resilience, let's say food security of this. This seems like a huge component of it too, because obviously if the food supply chain, when it comes to something as fundamental as beef, are compromised in some way, whether that be purposeful, you know, being purposely compromised or choked out to, you know, control prices, or whether that be even just, you know, various foreign adversaries who are embedded in our nation deciding to tamper with those food supply chains, causing massive recalls, all these things. Is that another component to this too, is just kind of overall making that supply chain for beef? And I mean that in terms of how the average person, how I could get beef, me having a lot more options. I mean, that seems to be a huge part of this, right? Is that overall resilience and kind of optionality that might come out of this?
It's absolutely that. It's actually optionality of who sells to you, how you get sold to, who buys what, when, and where. It's freedom, actually, in a place, a marketplace. Another analogy would be this. Way back in the day when you wanted to sell something, you put an ad in the back of the newspaper that you're having a garage sale on Sunday or Saturday, you know, and then everybody come down to that. So the garage sale then became Craigslist, and that was a whole new freedom and optionality. Then it became Facebook Marketplace, another capture, and that's kind of gone away. But at least Facebook Marketplace had verifiability of who you were that Craigslist never had. So this has given a digital marketplace that's open and fair to everybody that wants to come and play and participate in that. And ranchers don't like pump and dumps. They don't like scams. They don't tolerate scammers longer. And if you are going to be a bad, nefarious actor, you're going to be done with. You're gone. So there's a cowboy code. And I don't think people know what the cowboy code is. It's real. It's masculine as all get out. And it's full of integrity. It's based in faith in our creator. And it's serious. And it's something that actually Bitcoiners could use some of. You know, we've been to a lot of conferences together, and we know how Bitcoiners can be, and it looks a little frat party-ish at times. And, you know, a little bit more masculinity, a little more solid on the ground, a raising of consciousness, having a code that can help you get there. I recommend the cowboy code. I've been learning it and following it, and it's been improving my life. And I've done quite a bit to help, you know, raise my consciousness throughout these years. And cowboy shamanism, it's a good thing.
That's not a term I've heard before, cowboy shamanism. That sounds like we might need a whole nother discussion on that one.
Indeed. And that's one I made up, so that's not really out there in the culture. But it's true.
You just coined it, I think.
I think so. And it's something that our society could use, because in addition to attacks on everything else, there's an attack on masculinity and on men, and on men being men. And how do we actually become better men, actually test ourselves? But we can test ourselves with extreme sports and all that stuff that may just kill us. But it'd be better to test ourselves with hard work, digging a hole, learning how to ride a horse, learning how to be with cattle, being close to the land, how to actually work the land. Because AI is driving all of our jobs out. If you have some sort of tech job, if you have some sort of service job, those jobs are under extreme threat by AI now. And the young people in our nation, the young men of our nation, have no future, have no hope of a future, no hope of buying a house. But you know what they can do? They can raise cattle. They can be part of a ranch. They don't have to even own it. But if they're part of that, then they're securing food for them, their family, as they're growing up, and securing shelter. So they're actually securing a future in a way that AI has no chance of wiping out, because cattle need humans to actually work them. And so it's an AI-proof industry that really our young people should be looking at, and we're here to help bring them back to that. And I mentioned something earlier, the cowboy camp. We have opportunities to actually have cowboys teach young people, both men and women. So we also have the cowboy camp is both men and women, but a whole nother program for women is called Windy Whispers. And this is putting women in touch with horses, because there's a bond between women and horses that's profound, and it's good for both. There's something about being around horses. They are loving, beautiful creatures, and women understand their language very, very well. And there's a huge benefit to both. And there's a lot of horses that need a lot of help that are also being mistreated in many ways that are profound. And we think that's going to be a great program and a great, great opening up. And that's another part of beef. So all of this is under the umbrella of beef.com. How can we help our people, and how can we get people back closer to land, securing our futures, making families stronger, securing futures for our young people and for our old people that are aging out? Hey, why don't we just put the whole family on a ranch and we all live together? Let's not do old folks homes anymore. Let's not do suburbs anymore. Let's get back to the real. And it's the suburbs that are taking over our ranch land. It's the big tech AI companies that are taking over our ranch land. If we lose it, we might lose it forever. And we might lose our country forever if that happens.
That's one of this reminds me of, I think it was a post that Slim had recently. We were just talking about endgame framing and saying, like, this is a land war. Is that really what it comes down to? Like, this is actually a land war. That's not hyperbole. Like, that's the reality on the ground.
It's not hyperbole. We were just driving around his hometown in the panhandle of Texas, the Caprock Canyon area. And we drove around and saw a lot. He was showing me, he was teaching me, what is this land? These playa lakes, these natural lakes that form out on this Caprock Plains. And there are places water comes out, and a lot of them are dried up. The water that actually is used out there in the semi-pivot agriculture comes from the Ogallala Aquifer. It's this huge, deep, massive lake of water that covers six states underneath the ground. And on top of that now, we drove, we're driving past Cathcal operators that have their awesome little houses, their barns, they have trailers out there. They're set up for making food. And right across the street is this huge new subdivision. And we drove into this thing and drove around and we got lost inside there because everything looks exactly the same. All the houses are 5 feet apart. And it's, to me, that's dystopia. And that ranch that's across the street that's so beautiful, that looks like freedom, looks like sovereignty, that's the future that's being destroyed by huge subdivisions. The windmills out there, another capture of land. The solar farms out there, another capture of land. The AI tech is coming, and it's coming fast, and they're coming for our land, they're coming for the water. If you take the water away from the ranchers, how are they going to ranch? How are you going to do that? So it's a land and resource attack upon the ranchers of this country. And it's not just our country. It's everywhere, but it's pernicious in this country.
I mean, it seems fair to say, too, that, like, all of this is, like, you can't just fix one part of this problem, right? This is something that needs to be, like, a holistic approach because it's, if you fix one part of it, like, this is like a bit of a hydra of a monster, right? And you've got to slay the beast in its heart. You can't just cut off one head, more pop up in its place. It seems like what you guys are doing is trying to focus on this very, very, I mean, Herculean task of not just fixing one part of this industry, right? But trying to really change the way the entire thing works. But it's almost not changing the way it works. It changed the way it works now, but it seems like a return to basics. Just back to basics, but enabled with technology. Is that a fair analysis?
It is. And to expand on that a little further, everything's connected to everything, it turns out. And we see it in the fiat world. Everything's connected to everything. The money's broken, and then the incentives are broken everywhere. And we see in Bitcoin, the incentives are actually aligned for good behavior. And we want that Bitcoin world. We want that Bitcoin economy. We want all that. But we've got to fix everything in the process, too. And we have to use Bitcoin to do that. If we just stack and hodl our Bitcoin away, that's great individually. But also, can we actually use that Bitcoin in a way? And there's ways that can be done without having to spend it. There's lending programs, and lending's a big touchy topic inside of Bitcoin. But there's also, we have some partners that have some new possibilities for Bitcoiners that I don't think are commonly known. They aren't the big boys. There are other players. We have a Bitcoin-backed bank in El Salvador now as one option. And there's others as well that we're happy to talk to Bitcoiners about. If you're interested, please come talk to us because there's some details that we're going to keep private for now, but that are out there. Sure. So it's a way to go. And everything's going to, it's an ecosystem. We were trying to recreate this world in a new way. It's like trying to fix the body. If you think the body is just your heart that's the problem and you're trying to fix your heart, well, there might be some other things connected to your heart that are important to look into too. And it might be food related is the health fix you're looking for.
Let me ask you, this seems like something, if you're really empowering these smaller ranchers and empowering the bigger ranchers, but just the independent ranchers, right? This seems like something that the existing power structures, that the status quo is not going to be super happy about. Do you think that what kind of pushback are you guys anticipating? And also, I mean, is it a better, like, you know, launching it now, given some of the changes in the Department of Health, at least, like, do you think that it's a better environment for doing this now that there's maybe you can actually get even more kind of publicity and just awareness around this? I mean, this seems like something that would be right up RFK Jr.'s alley, I would think. But what are you anticipating in terms of sort of pushback from the entrenched incumbents? And how are you looking at kind of this landscape as you guys take on, again, this is not a small task. This is a very, very big task that is going to take a while. But I mean, it's worth the toil, right? But how are you looking at that right now? What are you guys, I mean, worried about, if anything, in terms of pushback?
This is not a marking, timing, economic development sort of move. We're at a critical point. We're at a critical point that if we go any further, we're going to lose it. We look at the entire macro system of the world global financial system, and as Bitcoiners, we see it teetering. We know that one country going down can take down all the currencies of all the countries. And so same with ranching. We're in a precarious situation, and the time is now. This acquisition happened when it happened. thank goodness it happened. It gives us a place to actually recreate a whole new system that's backed by Bitcoin, a re-incentivized system that can help save ranchers now. That's the market opportunity. The danger, it's extreme. I'm putting myself at danger talking to you today. And you've known me for years, and I've been not a public person on purpose. But this cause is so important to me and so important to our country and so important to Bitcoin and to all the countries around the world, to the people of those countries, that I'm willing to stand up and to fight and take a stand. And Texas Slim is one of the bravest people, one of the smartest people I've ever met. He is the Charles Goodnight of our day. He has found a new Palo Duro Canyon. That Palo Duro Canyon is called beef.com. It's a digital ranch that everybody's welcome to come and be a part of, and that we can build sovereignty, we can build freedom, we can build food security, we can help save our people, save our young people, save this industry, but save so much more in the process.
What are you... I mean, when will you know, will you ever know that you guys have won in this? Is there a moment where you could say, like, if XYZ happened, then now we have the upper hand? Or is this something that's just going to have to be an ongoing, constant vigilance? Like, it's a forever war, but it's a forever war for a good reason, not like just to bomb people in the Middle East for oil.
We'll know it will have won when Bitcoin's won. How's that? We'll know it's won when we saved independent ranchers. We know we've won when people are safe, free, can express themselves as they wish, move about their countries as they wish, to not have to ask permission from their governments, but actually be served by their governments. And that's the vision of the future, that we are not the serfs of our government. We, the people, give the power to the government to be the government. And this is our way to actually bring back freedom and sovereignty.
Are you guys targeting just the Americas with the United States of America, then also Central and South America? Are you looking at all into Europe and things like that? Or is that somewhat of a lost cause over there?
No, it's not, actually. And, I talked to some Bitcoiners early that told me, well, Europe's lost. Well, no, it's not. Ireland's reaching out and saying, hey, can you come help us? And Ireland is not lost.
Really?
Uganda's reaching out and saying, we have all the land you need and want. And Savannah, can you please bring good cattle and help save our people in Uganda? Kenya's asking us for help. There's countries in South America that would like that as well. And I was just in Colombia at the Bitcoin Medellin conference there, and a wonderful couple that's from Colombia that are raising cattle came up to me, and we had a nice conversation about, hey, what can you do for us? So talking to individuals, but talking at all different levels. And that's why it has to be a group effort. Are we going to be able to do everything? No, we're the catalyst for change. And then we're looking for everybody to come join, because it's a global effort and we can't do it by ourselves. We can only be the catalyst for that change and create the opportunity and the marketplace to actually make that change happen. How does it exactly look? Let's all figure that out together. That's a big question. This has never been done before. So how do you do it exactly? Well, we have good ideas. We have good plans and we're looking for more of them. And we're looking for people to say, hey, I want to stand up and be part of this too. I want to stand up for freedom. I want to help save my family. I want to help save my community. I want to help save my nation. I want to help save our world. And that's what we're doing. It's a big, big idea. And it's bodacious. It's extreme. But I think with Bitcoin, because we have such an asymmetric tool against this fiat financial system, that we can actually do this together. But we have to all participate together, grow together, raise our consciousness together. If we have our brains working better with healthy beef, we can all raise our consciousness. We can raise the consciousness of our species and save it, because it may be a species extinction thing we're facing.
I can't.
I'm not fear mongering there either. I'm actually trying.
I'm right with you on that. I also just can't help but think that you did say a catalyst for change, and it was just, sorry. I'm a dad now. I can't help but make dad jokes.
I love dad jokes.
I don't think that you're fear mongering here. I think that struck me as a very hopeful message.
Thank you. It strikes me
as hopeful because it means there's something that people can do.
When
you lose hope is when there's nothing you can do. That's right. Why so many people are, I think, very nihilistic about, especially young people, about their personal economic situation, because they feel that there's nothing they can do. There's no way for them to get ahead. There's no way for them to get a chance, to get a foothold, they can't pick themselves up by their bootstraps. They can't afford bootstraps, to the boomers out there telling them, just walk your resume in at the local store and they'll give you a job. And that firm handshake, and that's all you need, Sonny. But But this is that's why we have Bitcoin, and so we are hopeful, right? Bitcoiners understand how you could slip into nihilism, but they have hope because they understand the solution. This seems like another area where it'd be very easy to get super nihilistic about this, except that there is a path forward. There is hope. There are actionable steps that can be taken. And again, it's like this, it's this very kind of back to basics mindset. From everything you've told me here, this isn't about reinventing the wheel in terms of how, you know, how ranching is done. It's about reinventing the wheel in terms of, or, you know, going back and taking what was old, making it new with technology, using that. But in terms of what this is at its core, it's back to basics. It's back to tradition. It's back to respect for the animal, for the land, and for our fellow humans. And I think that's what's really just, it's what's really exciting, what's really, really empowering, really hopeful about this message, is it's something that it's like, this has the potential to ripple into so many aspects of society. Right? Because I mean, all so many of the mental, even I often wonder how much of the incredible amounts of mental illness and everything we see, how much of it is just tied back to what we're putting in our bodies, right? How much of it is tied back to what goes into our gullets and comes out the other end eventually, but how much of it is tied back to that? Because our food system has just been so, so broken, so overly subsidized, so manipulated by lobbyists, speaking of America here, that it just seems like there's no way to get past it. But this is something that I think, at least for me, this gives me a ton of hope, Tom.
Thank you. That's actually the message here. It actually is. And it's actionable hope. It's not just a pie in the sky. Hey, Bitcoin fixes everything. It's actually, let's play with our Bitcoin and do something useful with them, as Donald Trump told us to do. But also, you know, one thing we know for certain, nihilists aren't here to save the world. They're going to do nothing but be victims. And victim mentality is not going to get us through it. Victim mentality is low consciousness. High consciousness is actually doing something actionable, getting back to basics. And getting back to basics, we can have a lot of technology fail all around us, but if we're raising cattle on grass, that doesn't require a lot of technology. So it's actually technology proof. And that's something worthwhile and useful to do with our land, with our people, with our consciousness.
It seems that also this overall movement, and I think some of the things that you said just about the way that Bitcoiners specifically can get involved, especially maybe more OG Bitcoiners who are maybe wondering, you know, what do I do with this large stack that I have? Maybe folks that are in kind of just the HODL mode, they're not maybe necessarily acquiring new, they're not, you know, they've done their time, whatever, they're in a different place than a lot of us are personally, but they're wondering how to deploy that capital in a meaningful way. Right. And in a way that's going to actually make a difference. And I think that that's what's really exciting about what you said is some of these different models for people getting involved and not just getting involved from a capital standpoint, but getting involved from like a getting your hands dirty standpoint. Right. Like you can come with your labor or your capital and you can make a difference. And I think that really that's a powerful force because that means that even somebody who doesn't have a lot of capital can find a way to get involved in this movement and actually make a difference. And I think the point that you had about just the, you know, AI is coming for your tech job, like, yeah, it's true. It's coming for your tech job. It's coming for your lawyer job. It's coming for any one of your pencil paper pushing jobs. It's coming for them. Mm-hmm. But it's like getting back to doing things with your hands on the land is what I think a lot of folks are going to want to do, but maybe don't know how they can actually achieve that in a meaningful way. You know what I mean? Like that just seems too far out of reach. How the hell do you even start, right?
I agree, and I think it seems that way, but actually we're here, that's part of the Beef Initiative is to help that. If you have the inclination to do so, and Jason Rick proved it himself, a first-generation farmer, he hadn't done it, he figured it out, and he did it differently than all his neighbors did. He didn't go into the government programs, he did it differently, and he's here to help teach. He's a masterful teacher. There's many men like him, Cole Bolton from KNC Cattle, he's part of our advisory board as well, and a genius beef cattleman, and he has processes that we can actually replicatable and can actually show what's going on, how to do this right, and it makes a huge difference. It's the cowboy camp. Hey, come on down, let's do cowboy camp together. That sounds like a lot of fun, Walker. That's a Bitcoiner dream.
I want to come down. I want to do cowboy camp.
There's actually another point there too, the OG thing. And we got in Bitcoin about the same time, and that's when we met. And we're not OGs, thank goodness for that in some ways, and also unfortunately for that in some ways as well. But there's something I call the OG dilemma. And here's the OG dilemma. You have a large stack of sats, and you it's hard to deploy it. It's hard to deploy it because what's a better bet than Bitcoin? When you understand Bitcoin deeply, what's going to give a better return? Well, there's the Bitcoin treasury companies, and everybody's got very strong feelings about those and their activities and how those work and why they operate and what they do. But what about, so what are you going to actually put your money into that gives a return that's better than Bitcoin? Well, your food security, your sovereignty, that's something better. And if it actually, it can actually return as well as Bitcoin, there's a potential for that at least. It's at least worth looking into. It's at least investigating. It's at least having the conversation. So if you're in that OG dilemma, let's talk about what real sovereignty actually is. And it's beef and cold storage on pasture in many different ways. And that's the new cold storage that matters. It's KYC is know your cattle.
Well, that's good. So it's a good KYC is what you're saying.
It's a good KYC. Know your cattle. And if you know your cattle, you ride your horse among your cattle. That's how you know your cattle. So you become a horseman. And how do you feel like landed gentry? Is it being a big mansion in Miami? I don't think so. I think it's actually have your food sovereignty all around you, have your generational sovereignty all around you, that when you pass on your Bitcoin, you also pass on your Bitcoin ranch citadel. And that goes for generations, because 10 head of cattle can feed your family for generations because they keep reproducing. So suddenly you have a time chain of cattle that goes on and on and on. And that's worth having.
I'm loving all the Bitcoin analogies here, Tom. I really am. And I want to understand too. I mean, in terms of these big players that are out there, these kind of four large ones that you mentioned, is this something that has the potential to actually unseat them? Or does it just, is the goal to just provide a credible exit, a credible alternative to that system? But are they just so entrenched and they will presumably keep suckling at the teat of the government, keep putting their lobbying dollars in there, keep working on regulatory mode expansion? Is this something, do you guys envision this as you're actually trying to go out there and compete with them over time, or just need to be able to provide an exit for enough people? That's enough. That makes enough of a difference.
I think like Bitcoin, you're welcome everybody to the table. And if you want to come to the table as a good player, we're welcome to work with you. So there's players within there that, hey, maybe you do want to do this the right way. And maybe we can help you figure that out, because they're cattlemen too. Do they want to be part of a fiat system? Is it a choice actually? Not always. So, hey, let's do this. So Brooke Rollins is our new head of our agriculture department here in the U.S. And they have the $700 million. Let's do this regenerative agriculture right. Let's actually do it right. Why not? Doesn't that sound better? Won't you sleep better at night? Won't you actually be a better person? Won't you have a legacy and a heritage that you actually change the system? Let's do it. Let's talk.
Yeah, I would hope that people would want that, right?
Yeah,
because
me
ultimately
too.
This is something that this is undeniably like the movement that you guys are really initiating here. This is something that is undeniably a net positive for citizens of this country, or for citizens of El Salvador, or of any country that starts developing this. You don't want your soil to be continually, you know, just raped by the likes of Monsanto with their single use seeds and their lawsuits to the other, you know, to other farmers because some of their seeds blew into their crops, and all of these these ridiculous games that are played, you know, not talking even just about the cattle industry, but across agriculture, right? Mm-hmm. Small farmers are just at a huge disadvantage, and they're ultimately handicapped. And even if you look at just the price of farm machinery, it's gotten more expensive and more expensive and more expensive, even though the technology has gotten better and better and better. You know, like a combine shouldn't be 10 times as expensive as it was 20 years ago, but it is. Right. Even though it's, you know, maybe like it hasn't actually changed that much at a fundamental level. But it's like all this stuff, it's just fiat has broken so many things, the incentives primarily, but then everything else along the way. And it's like I hope we can get back to a place where we're able to exist in a more, let's say, self-sufficient. But, you know, we don't need to be entirely self-sufficient. Right. You can rely on other people like your local rancher. Right. That's the other thing. It's like this is also to me about building those smaller community connections, whether that be your local community or extended community online, building those connections to actually have that tribe of people that are ideologically aligned and want to see what's best, you know, for each other, but, and for themselves, but also just at a larger sense for I don't want to sound too like woo woo or whatever, but like for the future of humanity, this is something that is important. We don't want to be eating fucking fiat slop forever, right? We want to be eating good, clean, natural food. And that's something that I think everybody who like actually cares about what you put in your body, you should be able to get behind.
The plan is 3D printed meat and crickets. This is the opt out of that system. And I don't think anybody's excited about that system. So if you're excited about not eating crickets and 3D printed beef, then come help us out at the Beef Initiative. Let's be a catalyst for this change. Let's save the ranchers. Let's protect our beef heritage all over the world. And yet I don't think it's hyperbole at all or woo-woo at all. Let's actually save humanity this way. Let's actually do this. Let's actually get boots on the ground. Start digging a hole, because that's the first step of building a ranch. You got to dig a hole.
What's for people who are listening to this right now, or will listen to it after the fact and say like, dang, I really like want to get involved in this in some capacity, is the best place for them to go just to beef.com, beefmaps.com, to kind of hit you guys up there? How can people best get involved if they're hearing this and they're saying, wow, this is something I want to be a part of?
Definitely go to beef.com. We have a place to put your email in there, and that puts you into our database, our index of people that want to be allies in this. And let's do that. And we're going to provide more information. We're going to accept ideas and see how we can move forward. We want to gather information to make the world a better place. So let's start that. You can also follow us on Twitter. That's our place where we have the greatest footprint that we want, that because that's the greatest place for free speech that we have currently in our system. This is Noster. Of course, we love Noster and Bitcoin, but we don't quite have the global reach that we'd like with Noster yet, but we know that it's going to be an important place in the future. So reach out to us there and follow the Beef Initiative. Follow Modern T-Man, which is Texas Slim, our founder and our navigator of this thing, and the owner, the sole owner of beef.com. Go to beeff.com and find your local rancher. If they're not in your area yet, please let us know. Where do you want to see it? What countries aren't we covering? What areas of the country are we not covering yet? And I think that would be pretty good. That'd be great. Maybe, and if you want to follow me, I'm Tom Tabor Hoddle at Twitter. So
Tom Tabor Hoddle. Got it. yeah. Maybe. Okay. So Tom, maybe one last thing. Are you able to talk, just whatever you're able to share? I don't know how much you are able to, but we didn't actually talk about the act of acquiring this domain. I mean, it's kind of wild that Slim was able to get like beef.com. I imagine there was a lot of people who would have really, really liked to and paid ungodly amounts of money for that domain. It's kind of amazing that he was able to pull this off.
It's one of the most stunning accomplishments in modern food history and modern sovereignty. It's a stunning thing. So thank you for bringing that up again. I would say it's because of who Texas Slim is, because of who his partners are around the world, because of the belief and integrity that he's shown over these years, his fortitude. He's basically been a Texas Ranger for about 7 years, driving all over this country, gone through several pickup trucks, often living in it. It's not been comfortable. It's not been easy. He gave up his whole life for this mission because he made a promise to his friends. Many of those friends are dead now, that he would do something and do something important. And he's doing that now. He saw something. He saw this attack long ago, well before anybody else, and understood it and said, I have got to do this. And through that fortitude, through that just true grit, it's him and him alone that made this actually happen. And I couldn't be prouder of him in doing that. I couldn't acknowledge he's truly a polymath. He's actually a man who actually understands and is at many different levels. And if he wasn't, this would have never happened. Anybody else. It was truly only him that could make this happen. And the people that owned it, believing in him and his mission. And thank God they did. I don't know who those people are. I don't know the whole story, and it probably will never be told. But thank goodness it's here. Let's make it the best thing we possibly can. We have a piece of digital property, a digital ranch that we can actually fight tyranny, promote freedom, health, mental health, conscious health, all of it around the world.
I love it, Tom. This was an awesome conversation, and thank you for thinking of me to bring this news out there. Is there anything we didn't get a chance to cover yet? We covered a lot. Did we go through everything that you wanted to touch on today?
We did. We did a lot. Thanks. Thank you so much for everything you do here. At one point, I wanted to make a podcast, but you already do it better than I ever imagined, and you do it with such grace.
You should still make a podcast.
We'll see. We'll see.
you need a beef podcast, you know, or you can call it Cattleist.
That's a pretty good
podcast.
One. That may be upcoming. So we'll see how that goes.
I hope it is. And again, everybody, you know, check out beef.com, check out beefmaps.com, at Beef Initiative on X and on Noster, at Tom Tabor, HODL or HODL, however you like to pronounce it, Modern T-Man, Texas Slim. Check him out. Appreciate what you guys are doing. Really excited to see this. This gives me a lot of hope. You know, I'll keep boosting this message, and I think I need to make it down to the ranch as well. That'd be a really good time.
Come on down. Thanks, Walker.
I got some boots. I got to get myself a hat, though, I think.
Giddy up. This hat right here, I didn't say anything about this. This is a brand made by Mark Chapman right here in this room that I'm sitting in. This is the new brand for the country of El Salvador.
Wow. That's pretty sweet.
So to get one of these hats, it's going to take something. So if you're interested in that, reach out to us about that, too.
I might just have to. That sounds like, yeah. That sounds fantastic. All right. Hey, Tom, appreciate it. Really, thank you for your time. Good luck. Good
thank
luck
you.
With this. I know. And really encourage Bitcoiners to follow you guys. Check out what you're doing. Amplify the signal and do what you can to, you know, support your local rancher and go shake their hand. And which sounds like it'll be getting a heck of a lot easier with what you guys are doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Walker, so much.
Cheers, Tom. Thanks to everybody who tuned in. We'll see you next time. And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to the Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.